Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Ketzer Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group and CA in Zuchus of Rivka Bela Bas Nechama Shifra and in honor of Rabbi Tramp. The halachas we're going to be talking about today are the halachas of Netilas Yadayim, washing one's hands before the meal. This is Siman Mem, the 40th chapter in the Ketzer Shulchan Aruch. We're going to break this up into two sections. Our first section is going to look at three concepts. The concepts are the vessel, the water, and how to wash one's hands. In the second part, we'll look at chatzitza, interruptions, koach gavra, the way one pours the water, what one does if there is no water, interruptions, and finally food which is dipped in liquid. So let's just jump straight in. We're looking at three basic concepts today. The basic introduction to all of what we're doing today is the idea that we have a requirement to wash our hands before the meal. There are two main reasons for this. Reason number one is the concern for purity, tumah tahara, and that is no longer in force as it was in the old days. However, it was institutionalized around bread, which is the mainstay of our diet, and therefore that remains in place. And also, of course, for hygiene, when one's sitting down for a meal as well. It is important to realize that one does not need to wash with a bracha for all amounts of bread. It's only if the bread is a kibetza, is the shear of the volume of an egg, that one says a bracha. If it's less than the volume of an egg, one would wash but not say a bracha. Well, that's quite uncommon in today's society with overload. So let's look at the three concepts. We're going to examine the vessel, the container that one needs to use to wash, the water, and how to wash one's hands. Jump straight in with the vessel. So Netilas Yadayim needs to be done from a vessel. What happens if the vessel has an imperfection? So if there's a hole or a crack which can be seen on both sides of the vessel, it is a problem. I've noticed that people have very, very fancy houses and they seem to sometimes miss even having a cup for Netilas Yadayim. It's a basic staple in a house. Or sometimes people have it and they have this broken plastic cup. It behooves us to have a beautiful cup, a cup which is perfect and not cracked, because if it's cracked, it doesn't work for Netilas Yadayim as well. So it's important to be able to make sure one does the mitzvah with the greatest amount of attention one would give to all other aspects of life as well. What happens if the vessel has a lip? So for instance, many times when you have a pitcher, it has a lip. So is that a problem? So the answer is that it depends. It is a problem, but it depends on how big the problem is. So some pitchers have a lip which stands above the level of the edge of the vessel itself, of the jug. So the lip goes up. The problem with that is that that lip area itself is not considered a vessel which contains enough to hold for a vessel. So therefore, when one's pouring out of it, that is pouring directly out of a kli, which is not really a kli, a vessel which is not really a kli. So one should really pour from the sides of such a jug. If the lip is of the same level and height of the container, that's less of an issue. If it's lower, sometimes you'll see that the lip will be like an indentation which goes below the level. That's a problem, because now if one fills up that jug, that'll only go to the level of the lip. Beyond that lip, it'll start pouring out, even though it hasn't reached the walls of the top of that jug. In such a case, that becomes an issue where one can only pour out of the lip itself, because that's the only area which is actually pouring out of a vessel. The rest of the walls in that case are not considered the vessels of the kli. So one has to just be careful of this in general. You'll notice that's why washing cups themselves don't have lips. They don't have indentations. They're flush all the way around as well. What if the container cannot balance by itself? So let's say it's a container which has a round bottom. So the truth is, if it's made to be used for Netilah, then that's fine. But if it's not made for it, so for instance, it's a pot lid and one's using it to wash, but it doesn't stand stably by itself, that is a problem and it cannot be used for Netilas Yadayim. What happens if I don't have a vessel? So if one can dip one's hands into a mikveh or a river for Netilas Yadayim instead, and the bracha would still be Netilas Yadayim in this situation. What about snow? Can I use snow? So the really only b'dieved should one really use snow, and only if the snow that's touching it together in one area is more than the amount that is necessary for a mikveh, which is around 250 gallons or 965 liters of snow in one area for it to be used for a mikveh. What about a faucet? So a faucet, a tap or a tap head is not going to be good because there is no kli. There's no vessel. The pipes go straight from the reservoir. The reservoir is not a vessel. And it goes all the way through the pipes to one's tap, which one switches on. There was no kli that would not be sufficient to be able to use for Netilas Yadayim before the meal. What about a pump? So the way that sometimes the pumps would work in the old days is that they would drive a pipe into the ground so that it would be connecting to the underwater springs, depending on how high the water table is. and one would physically pump out of that pump water which would be from underground. In that situation, although there is no kli because it's only pipes, there's no vessel to hold the water, nonetheless, it's like one is actually immersing one's hands in a spring, and then one would be able to wash one's hands in a spring for the meal. The only addition that the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch adds is that if one is using such a pump, one should put one's hand just above the ground, because a mayan, a spring, is only going to work if a person actually is on the ground. Now, we move to our second concept, and that is the water. So a few basics about the water. Most people are not aware of all of this. How much water is needed for Tinnitus El Sudaim? So technically speaking, it's a revius. A revius is measured between 2.9 or 5.1 fluid ounces, depending on the shear of Rav Chaim Noah or the Chazon Ish, or in the metric system, 86 milliliters is the lower range, and 150 milliliters is the Chazon Ish. And that's really not a significant amount of water. And that's why the Kisra says one should not be mitzamtzem. One should not just have just exactly that. One should have a little bit more as well. Why is that? So he points out, first of all, we make mistakes, but also because if you pour a full revius over one's hands, then that would take away any of the tumor or the impurity that may be on the hands. But if it's slightly less than that, it doesn't. And therefore, it could impurify the water and make the issue much worse now, because now that will now actually be more susceptible to metame, to make impure other things as well. What if the water is of a different color? So if the water cover is different because of something which fell into them or because of their locale, they cannot be used. So for instance, if there was dye or ink or smoke discolored the water, that cannot be used. But if they change because of themselves, so for instance, temperature or the temperature changed the water, it was very warm, or mud mixed into the water, that is fine and can still be used for the mikveh. What if I already used water? The water was already used. So, like for instance, I used the water to wash dishes. I used the water to wash vegetables. I used water to cool things down, or use them for measuring as weights. So in that case, one cannot use that water for Nitzel HaSudayim. That water is disqualified. Water which was done, work was done with it as well. What if they were not discolored, but or worked with, but a pet drank from them? So in that case, let's say a dog drank from it. In that case, it's considered disgusting and should not be used for Nitzel HaSudayim, even though there's no physical difference in the water itself. What about salty water? So salt water would not be allowed when a dog would not drink from it. Meaning to say, if it's too disgusting for even an animal to consume, then that would not be good enough for Nitzel HaSudayim as well. And last question in this section is, can I invalidate a barrel of water by putting my hands into it? So let's say I have unwashed hands, I stick them into a barrel of water, can I invalidate the barrel? The answer is no, you cannot impurify the barrel, but let's say you stick your hands into a barrel of water to wash them off. Let's say you have stickiness in your hand, you wash them off just as a rinse, a hygienic rinse, and now you want to use them for Nitzel HaSudayim, you have a problem, because you've now worked with that water. If you use that water, that's invalidated the entire thing. So it doesn't impurify it, but it makes it water that was done work with, and therefore it is invalid. We look at our last concept for today, and that's the third concept, which is, how do we actually wash hands? How do we do Nitzel HaSudayim? So first basics, what hand goes first? It goes right and then left. How much of the hand needs to be covered? So the Kisra takes it for granted one needs to do it up to the wrist. However, in a case where there's very little water which is available, one can do it up to the knuckles. What is the idea of this? How is this accomplished? One needs to make sure that the entire hand, all parts of the hand, is covered at all times, so the fingers cannot be clenched together. It needs to be the water runs down to the end of the fingers. What if I'm using a vessel which has a very narrow neck? So Kisra says, be careful to make sure that because of the narrow flow, that the entire hand does get covered. It's not going to be only limited to a certain part of the hand. How many times must I wash? The Kisra suggests doing it two times on each hand. Some people do Kabbalistically three on each hand as well. What's the next step? What do I do right afterwards? So one should lift one's hands to the level of one's heads. Why is that? So based on the Pasuk in Tehillim, in Kuf Lamed Daled, in 134, it describes, Su'u Yedeichem Kodesh, lift up your hands when they are holy, Ubaruchu Es Hashem and Bless Hashem, which is seen as the format of what happens. One washes one's hands, thereby purifying them, Su'u Yedeichem Kodesh, Ubaruchu Es Hashem, and then one makes the blessing for the Nitzel HaSudayim. What's next? So one says the Bracha, Asher Kedishonu B'Mitzvah Zivonu, Al Nitzel HaSudayim, Hashem, you commanded us with your commandments, and you commanded us to wash our hands, and then one dries them. Wait a moment. Did Hashem command us to wash hands? Where is that in the Torah? This pasuk in Tehillim isn't a commandment. It seems to be an asmacht. It seems to be a hint to this. So the truth is that this is an example of a bracha which is reflecting a different mitzvah in the Torah. And that mitzvah is, the mitzvah is lo sasur, you should not deviate from the halachas that the sages, that our sages made for Israel. And this is, Nitzel HaSudayim is a halacha which is ordained rabbinically, And therefore, when we are saying the words "Asher Kiddushanu v'Mitzvosav," that Hashem, you command us with your commandments, so tzivanu, it means to say you command us to listen to the sages. And this is an example of how I'm listening to your Torah by listening to the sages. That's a very interesting application of this. This would be different to, let's say, when a person says "Asher Kiddushanu v'Mitzvosav tzivanu likboya mezuzah," because the Torah says "Uchsavtom al mezuzas besecho v'yisharecho." There, the actual commandment is doing that mitzvah. That's not rabbinic. That's biblical. Interesting. Just a subtlety one should be aware of when saying the words one says all the time. How can one say the bracha after the mitzvah? Usually when one has a mitzvah, one says the bracha right beforehand. Think about lulav, think about shofar, think about mezuzah. Think about most of the mitzvahs that we do, the bracha comes right before the activity, not afterwards. So the reason in this case is because twofold. One is that one cannot say a bracha when one's hands are soiled, much like, as an example, let's say when a person converts to Judaism, they cannot say the bracha of the tefillah before they convert because they're not Jewish. After they come out of the mikvah, they do say the bracha because at that point in time they're Jewish. Similarly, one's hands are in a state of impurity and one is not allowed to say a bracha in such a state. So one can only say the bracha afterwards, therefore just push afterwards. However, there's another reason, and that is because drying is also part of the mitzvah. As we know, drying is part of the cleaning process, so the drying is it has not happened yet, and therefore one is still able to do this. This is important because sometimes people make the mistake and dry a lot, dry and then say the bracha. That is inappropriate according to the second reason. One would need to be saying the bracha before one has started or completed the drying process as well. It's also important because people sometimes, you'll see people having conversations around Netilas Hayadayim, and they'll carry on talking as they are filling up the cup, and then as they pour it over their hands, and then they say the bracha. That is inappropriate because there's not supposed to be an interruption between the bracha and the action. And usually that works before, the bracha is before and then the action, so one cannot interrupt between the two of them. In this case, the bracha is afterwards, then certainly one cannot interrupt between the action and the bracha. So the moment one starts washing, one has to be silent until after one, and obviously one has eaten as well. That's the connection between the netilah and the eating itself. Are there any rules about drying? So the answer is yes, the hands should be completely dried and they should not be dried on one's clothing. What if I wash one hand and touch the other in between before washing it? So that's a problem because the second hand, which is unwashed, will now impurify the water which is on the first hand, and therefore one needs to dry one's hands and restart the washing process. One little piece over here which is important to notice is that everybody's very, very makbid about not speaking between washing hands and eating bread. We'll get to describing some of the reasons for that later on, but one of the reasons is the Gemara tells us techel and atila bracha, right after washing is the bracha, and those two activities need to be put together. But much more serious than that is not interrupting between the washing and the bracha. That itself is interrupting in the worst of cases, and one has to be very, very careful about that as well. With this, we conclude the first of the sections of Netilas Yadayim. We'll conclude with the next one tomorrow. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.